of how do you deal with the issue of the line and so on. But I hope when you do so, it will clarify some of the issues. Can you respond to questions to what members ask? I just suppose that as members were asking, you were able to write in group questions. You don't have to start now and say, you've got a huge team here. Some should be tasked to group questions as they are asked, one, two, so that when the response comes, as it flows in terms of the responses and so on. Acting DG?
Okay, I think the question that relates to HR and finance will be answered by TDG, GNA, and Chief Director HR. And that includes the questions of corporate governance issues that relates to SOEs. Then the question that relates to regulatory issues and spectrum issues on regulation and policy will be answered by TDG Police. Then some that are technical on the spectrum will be answered by TDG Khadem. And then the rest of the others that relates to TDG will be addressed by TDG Peer on especially the date and why did we refer to 2016. I'm trying to look at the summarized issues, but the role of licensing is what we're going to start with. And partly we'll refer to Chapter 5 of the ECA, Section 21, 2A up to D for ease of reference. Chapter 2, the role of minister on spectrum, Section 3, 1, A and B, and 2A, and Section 4 of that regulation. I think it should be quite clear. The role of the minister as the minister of the policy making in the whole sector, by the way, not only between ICASA and the rest, but the whole industry, but also as the minister of communication running as the executive authority of DOC. Those distinctions also have to be made, and how then ICASA relates to us around how we allocate budgets from treasury viewpoint, and how then they account to us as an entity. Partly that is independent, but that is quasi-independent. It needs to be explained very well because the courts are quite clear on these issues even before the quasi-independence that they have around accounting to DOC on their funding, on their performance. That's why we have to then come with them and look at the operational plan, the administrative part of the issues. Also, when we look at the market, how much money are they making for the state for us to return money to the revenue? That clearly also has to be understood by members as we explain our role, because it's actually multiple role that we are having. We are a policymaker, we are indirectly the player. Somehow you find ourselves playing either in telecom as a shareholder, and we also play as an indirect player through DPE, broadband infraco. We are players as government in a different segment. So you see those multiplicity of roles that we play that tend to confuse or conflate our role. So we play through CENTEC on the other areas of transmission. We also use spectrum there. We have licensing, obligations. We have other related issues, so even on that one, we are indeed a player too, because there are other transmitters, transmission operators that compete with us in a equal level.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson. I'll run through some questions here which were asked. I think the baseline, Honorable Chairperson, on the slide 5 can be obtained and be sent to members, that report that the DOC did put together there. And I am not able to expatiate on the levels of adoption on before and now at this point in time, Honorable Chairperson, because I don't have this analysis report which was put together by the department in the course of informing our strat plan last year. So, but I'm sure my colleagues would be able to either email it. Mr. Munjarara actually worked on this analysis which can be made available. The point, Honorable Chair, that I think I also wanted to clarify, I think it does come from Honorable Mtambi on slide 6 about the underperformance and underinvestment and what policies are we making, Honorable Chair. I'll try to just be comprehensive in response to this. The department undertook several study missions, Honorable Chairperson, to Malaysia, to Australia, to precisely understand how they have dealt with this whole issue of first the declining trend in fixed line subscription, and secondly how such operators in such markets where they have taken ownership of establishing a mobile operator, in the case of Telkom when it established ATA, how have they actually came up with their strategies. And we were also referred to New Zealand. The exercise led the department to a thorough workshop with Telkom in particular. That workshop also informed the strategic view on the currently existing regulatory burdens that Telkom still needs to face. So we did make that understanding that coming from the Telecommunications Act and the exclusivity that was given to Telkom, there were challenges which in fact do still persist for Telkom. And Honorable Chairperson, you will recall that we are operating in an ECA environment currently now. For instance, in some of the MTRs, the impact of the MTRs on Telkom, you'll find that it has been able to increase its revenue base since its implementation in 2010. But there are still certain, for instance, baseline figures which will continue to hurt Telkom over time. So all of those issues, Honorable Chairperson, are issues we believe needs a comprehensive review and ultimately a very clear policy guide that is coming from the whole ICT review process itself. Other issues include the need to do local loop unbundling or not as one of the strategies. But competition is also a very important issue, as you know, because Telkom as a fixed infrastructure operator, if I could put it that way, would be deemed to have a significant share of the infrastructure market. And how is charges that are competitive in nature accruing to that? So there's a number of things here that we have actually workshopped, and we believe, the whole exercise on the ICT policy review would inform how this market could, particularly Telkom. My concern, Honorable Chairperson, is that also the broadband policy has a very specific function expected of Telkom. And that policy, when it went to cluster, and it may speak to the interrelation between broadband and Infraco and how we think Telkom must play this role. It is very clear to us that investment by Telkom will help the country to achieve broadband quicker. Because Telkom's network is vast and with sufficient funding investment, and I think there is appetite from the public funding side to invest in broadband networks. So the broadband policy is also specifically addressing the whole issue of Telkom. More importantly, to stress that investment did not duplicate networks, such that we must see cooperation by these entities to deal with this. It is not to say, Honourable Chair, that fixed is a better future for Telkom. No, there must be ways in which its infrastructure can help it to do. For instance, we have seen now with the services that Telkom has actually launched on Telkom Mobile. So it means you are able to actually use this facility even on wireless basis. And I think it's a very good response. There were a number of questions in relation to the issue about the over-the-top, Honourable Chairperson, it's an ongoing international discussion, actually. It also relates to mechanisms for regulating voice over IP. And indeed, adoption for such services such as Skype is increasing. But how do those who own infrastructure actually, get revenue out of such services, and it's a discussion that the ITU is actually trying to deal with as it is around telecommunication policy globally, and there are resistance whether these kinds of international regulations may not impact on charges further on for the consumer. So there has to be a balancing act here. I recall when we were here in December, there was an expert who made us aware of that possibility. Whilst developing countries want to attract revenue out of this, the flip side of it is that it may hurt consumers and thereby affecting adoption of such services as Skype and WhatsApp and so on. But I think domestic, you are seeing a downward trend in the cost of mobile internet access. And I do take a point, Honourable Chair, you are saying that we need not to see promotions, as it were. But there is a trend that shows that there's high adoption of mobile internet services. Honourable Chair, there's an issue about this role of the department around the point that Honourable Mutua made in reference to my presentation. What we're trying to communicate in that market slide, Honourable Mutua, is to say that it would be good that the finalization and therefore the allocation of radio frequency spectrum is actually finalized. I'm not necessarily speaking about who has to do this. If I were to identify the roles, the matter is sitting with the minister in terms of the policy directive. It must be finalized and issued to ICASA to effect its processes. And this is now the holdup. So there isn't, I think, a point to Honorable Killian, there isn't an intention by the department in this specific issue, for instance, to say that the department will be the one licensing. No, that would be fundamentally wrong, and in fact, it will not be allowed in terms of the law. But because I was presenting in terms of the market view, and Honourable Mutabu did read, in fact, a view that the market feels that this is a key important issue to be resolved. But alignment also is very important, and it is also necessary that when the policy directives go out, the framework is almost very clear on what it is, the factors that the regulator must look at when it takes on this whole issue of licensing. So licensing is specifically indeed the important function of the regulator, and we do recognize that. And the law does also say in Section 3 that the minister can make policy in relation to radio frequency spectrum policy. So the lines are very clear there. As I'm on issues related to ICASA as well, how are we relating with respect to the sharing of the database? So the department initiated this a project of establishing a data warehouse, to your point, Honorable Mutambu. In that project, we discussed the extent to which the department can store and what kind of data can the department store. With ICASA, we came to a joint agreement that the same database must be installed at ICASA, for which the department has paid for. Because the law also enjoins ICASA to collect much more important data which the department will not necessarily be able to collate because of the sensitivity of information, competition, and the safety of that information as well. And we did agree that we will keep information which is largely important for our economic analysis of the sector and also the policy impact. Such information can help us there, but ICASA can go in as far as keeping data and requesting from entities to give data using the very specific law that allows them to keep such information. So it is one source, but the nature, so the system is one, and it is stored at ICASA and is again stored in the DOC. ICASA does have ways in which they're going to populate that, for which information will not necessarily be able to access. I hope I am very clear here. This database is stored on both ICASA and DOC. ICASA's populated information will not be accessible to DOC to clear the whole issue of market information sensitivities. So in terms of market incentives to encourage investment, I mean the broadband policy is quite very far with respect to how these incentives can be derived from the sector itself. The point, DDG Hadebe will expatiate probably here. My perspective of investment is that South Africa has a huge potential for high broadband growth, because currently as it is, there's infrastructure limitations. The network points are not far enough to give you the desired speed. The switches need to be upgraded, and so on. So there is a much greater market potential here. One of the issues which we believe will be a key driver for this market is, in fact, the data market. So with all of the number of ISPs that we have here, we believe with the wholesale pricing, and the study will probably give more evidence here, with the whole case of affordable wholesale broadband pricing, it is very much possible that leasing of bandwidth and therefore a distribution will make this market grow much bigger than it is. And this is also a huge market investment. I think I'm just going to make a comment on the set-top box processes and the readiness. And I think we did update the committee here in December that the country is not ready to necessarily switch off. We have not actually seen the what we refer to as a commercial launch as yet. And the reason why the timelines in the planning here is because we're asked to go into all of our entities to update the project plan. The project plan currently informs us specifically that the timelines of 2013 or 2015 would be very much difficult to meet under the circumstances, and I think we are admitting to those challenges actually. It will be very difficult in that the planning of the migration, all things being equal, will not necessarily be less than 3 months. And this is why we make this estimation of 2016 as a period to conclude migration. And I have said earlier on that it is very difficult, Honorable Chairperson, because you see, during migration, broadcasters lose a lot of money. And with dual illumination, where they broadcast both analog and digital, the costs for the broadcaster are actually more significant. And we are actually observing those kinds of worries and concerns from themselves, that we almost have to create certainty. So when they invest in content as broadcasters, even digital content, which will be a bit expensive for them, things have to be clear how they will happen. So you are finding us negotiating a lot on the implementation mechanisms of how we're going to do things. And so these are some of the challenges we're actually experiencing with regards to digital broadcasting. But we think it is a necessity that we would need to be helped. In fact, the Digital Migration Office of the Department also, in terms of skills capacity there and filling the posts, also is another challenge that we need to actually resolve in filling the positions which are in the structure there. I think I'll hand over to Didi Chikhadebe.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and ADG. There were a number of issues that were raised with regards to ICT infrastructure. I think the first one that I would like to...
You can kiss the mic.
The first one that I would like to bring to the attention, I think with regards to the ECT, clearly there was an omission from our side to have included it on a list of legislative this year, because in the program that we have submitted for consideration, we have listed that as one of the items that will be presented before Parliament. I'm still not loud enough. All right, thank you very much, Chairperson. Now, there was an issue around the set-top box. You know, this is one instance, Chairperson, where we know what we need to do, we know the numbers, we have to work backwards. However, we do not have the money to do so. So basically, that's what is happening here. You know, we know when we need to switch off, we've got 5 million set-top box to manufacture, we've got to spread that coming back up to this year. And based on the available resources now, we've only got 200 and we can only subsidize 300,000 set-top boxes. Assuming we can get additional money, then we can do more. But again, this has an implication on your switch on and switch off. So this is very much linked to that. And on your availability again, on your spectrum, as Mr. Pira alluded to earlier on. So this is very much interlinked. Pending on the availability of resources, we might have to tweak some of the figures here, including how we switch off or on, whichever way you look at it. There was a question around what is a cybersecurity hub. Well, in simple language, I would equate a cybersecurity hub to what is commonly known as Center for Communicable Diseases, you know, where you monitor various outbreaks of diseases. For example, you know, we had the bird flu, you know, a center would pick it up in Malaysia and look at how best to address it, pull resources globally from elsewhere.
We also ate donkey biltongs.
Okay, yes. Now, it would then pull resources to identify what exactly that problem is and come up with solutions, which it will then share with other centers for communicable diseases. Now, that's a simple this thing of this cybersecurity app. Now, technically, what does that mean? It means that we are going to establish a center here in South Africa that will monitor any attacks on critical networks, continuously monitor, in South Africa, and be able to share with other centers elsewhere globally to say, this is a trend we're picking up in Malaysia, be aware, South Africa. Would also share such information with them, with the view of ensuring that we put in place solutions to address that problem. It will also facilitate us as South Africa to pull our own technical expertise together to look into some of these problems and be able to address them. As you will appreciate, Chairperson, is that, you know, the processing of water is based on ICT. How much water? You know, the processing of electricity is based on ICT. And it's imperative that we protect this infrastructure. We've got to continuously monitor our networks and understand what is happening. So this cybersecurity hub is going to do exactly that.
I thought you'll explain the CERT on that and the national, the establishment of national cyber inspectorate. I think you must elaborate as far as that.
Okay. Now, again, the ECT Act makes provision for the establishment of a cyber inspectorate. Now, the cyber inspectorate was to be established to monitor illegal activities on the internet and report that to the police or to law enforcement. It doesn't have law enforcement powers, but it can monitor and then recommend for. We have made provision for the establishment of the cyber inspectorate within the new structure so that it can monitor what is happening, including looking at some of the concerns that honorable member has alluded to, you know, child online abuse, etc., etc. Now, the other question that came to fore was the issue around the broadband policy and what the National Treasury was reviewing. I think there's only one broadband policy initiative that is happening. It is led by the DOC. And obviously, following the finalization of the policy, we're going to come up with a strategy which will then inform your implementation plan, which will be costed. And it is my understanding, based on the discussions that we have with the various stakeholders, in doing so, we work through C15, Treasury sits in there, that once we have costed this problem plan, we'll then present this, the minister will then present this case to Treasury for consideration for funding. So definitely funding will be made available subject to the availability of that case. This is my understanding, Chairperson. But again, we're all working under the auspices of CIP15. Now, CIP15 is chaired by the Minister of Communications at an intergovernment level. But at an implementation level, you have what we call a CIP coordinator, who in this case is Infraco. The approach that the PIC has adopted is that they've always preferred to have the implementing agency being the coordinator. It works well maybe with transport and things like that, but in a market like ours, it has its own challenges. So we are in a forum of CIP where DPE sits, Treasury sits, DST, DTI, etc., etc. The issue of switch off, Mr. Piri has addressed. In terms of broadband, whether spectrum is a priority, the mere fact that we have highlighted there, we're merely emphasizing that spectrum is critical to broadband. There is no way we can realize broadband access if we do not address issues of spectrum
spectrum access. For now, I'd like to stop here, Chief. Thank you.
Honorable Chairperson, there was just a question which I think I left out around the reasons for us to go into the SAPO amendment. Honorable Chairperson, you will recall that the Constitutional Court of the Republic made a judgment in relation to the pension fund of SAPO. And in that judgment, it also imposed a timeline within which an amendment has to be made with respect to the pension fund matter. And this amendment is in relation to that. It's a very, very small amendment in relation to... So it comes from the Post and Telecommunications Amendment Act into this particular one, because now you have actually produced this particular legislation. So it is, in fact, a very urgent amendment because it is imposed that the legislator has to actually address this issue. The second issue is on DTT performance period. So when to switch on and when to switch off. ICASA produced regulations which were gazetted in the course of December. In those regulations, they make clear that the minister will determine the performance period. So at this point in time, in relation to when are we going to start this, we are at the consultation phase where at the end, the minister will then release a notice in the Gazette on the performance period itself. And here there are a number of factors to look at. For instance, when will the substop boxes be on the market to realize that? And are the broadcasters ready with the content? How far is Centec with regards to signal distribution for DTT and factors like that? So that notice will also be finalized still in the first quarter of the financial year. I think there was just that point, ADG.
Thank you. DG.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I thought I would start by addressing the makeup of the DOC budget. I think Honorable Steyn made a comment earlier on to say it would appear that we're giving 1.1 billion to the entities and the rest, which is almost close to a billion, stays within the department. Honorable Chair, the budget is structured in such a way that 76% of the allocation goes to the entities. Now, if you take slide 43, under program 4, which is broadcasting and communications, regulations and support, there is a figure of 1.1 billion. Then when you go to infrastructure, there is the way the new budget structure it's designed, not all the transfers are under one. There is a transfer of 535 which goes to Centec under infrastructure support, which then makes the total transfers to 1.5 billion. So what is then left, Honorable Chair, in the department? It's only about 23%. If we go to page 37 of the document itself, the Stratplan document, I think Honorable Drogen raised a question, as well as Honorable Sheen, on salaries. That will be on page 37 under current payments. There will be compensation of employees. There are two figures there. There's 173 and 21 combined, making 194. Now, if you look at the increase from 2012 to 2013, it's not a significant increase, and it's not really an increase that has been, in fact, let me put this context that we developed a new structure as a result of the organizational review process. And what that process did, the vacancies or the positions increased to a higher number, and we then approached Treasury to look for funding for those positions. Unfortunately, funding could not be made available. However, the advice that we got from Treasury was that we needed to use the current budget to fill in the new structure. So as it stands, even if we were to fill all the positions, the 194 would not necessarily be sufficient because it is still based on the old establishment. So that is the explanation on the salaries. You notice that the increase from 2012 to 2013 is not that significant. Meanwhile, the number of positions has increased significantly. In terms of then what is left, because the entire budget is 2 billion, in terms of what is then left, because I'm now dealing with the current payment, which is 484, which is the top number, bolded top number there. Then you have goods and services. Now, under this, the goods and services, you have various categories. You have advertising, which largely deals with GTT. I think Honorable Shin did ask a question on that. Then we have 112 emergency call center, which is classified under consultants agency fees. And then in terms of the use of consultants in the department, I must indicate that the intention, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, is not to rely on consultants, but the intention is to make sure that we fill positions and reduce the use of consultants. And this amount that talks to consultants, it talks to various projects within various branches that have to be catered for. Now, if we were to look at the figure of a budget of 2 billion, and then you single out consultants of 83 million, then you begin to see the picture that the department is not really hammering the use of consultants to that extent. We are trying to limit, and with the hope that once these vacancies are filled in, the officials who will be coming will then be able to pursue these kinds of activities. So I thought, Honorable Chair, let me just give that a background on the budget makeup. There was then a question raised by Honorable Drogen on accessibility, more especially around public awareness. We have raised that issue. The agency that is working on public awareness is factoring in the issue of disability in their programming. Of course, the GTT awareness is only taking off at this point, but with time, we will be able to see that that picture changing. Honorable Killian raised a question around human resources. Around DOC bursaries, recruitment, whether do we recruit the right people, and so on. I must state that, Honorable Killian, that the challenge that we are sitting with, which I would like to put a preamble to it, that we are not really complaining, but we know what needs to be done. The department has inherited a number of legacy issues, wherein you have had people who were put in positions that they should have not been appointed into. So in other words, you have had a situation where there was a mismatch between what the jobs were requiring versus the people who were sitting in those positions. We've had situations that we have once again reported to the committee around irregular appointments and so on. Now, taking all of this into account, and once again not really making them excuses, we have then taken a view that the skills audit should then be able to identify the gaps so that a developmental plan is put in place. But this is not to suggest that...
Gentlemen, can you just help me? I just want to understand something. How do you tell me to be an engineer?
I'm saying if to
identify a skill gap, there's a mismatch in terms of appointments. How do you turn me to be an engineer? I'm just saying, all that I'm saying is there's a limitation on what you are saying. At one point, we have to take tough decisions. Because you can't turn me to an engineer anyway. You're a spectrum engineer. That's the fact. And you need a spectrum engineer. And a person who's not a spectrum engineer sitting in the post, what do you do? That's the reality which you must face very soon. Because you can't turn me to an engineer. I'm not. You need a spectrum engineer. How do you do that with the skills upgrading and other things? Is it possible to achieve that? I'm just raising that so that you also help us to what extent the skill audit gap can help. Because you can do it and finish it after some time again, you come to the same problem that an engineer is not an engineer. A person who's sitting in a position who's supposed to be an engineer and is not an engineer, it's just like that. I don't think we'll change that reality. Unless people are moved, find a way with engaging treasury and other things to get money to appoint the right people. But an engineer will never be an engineer. A person does not have an accountant, is not an accountant, or does not have the skill of finding him or herself in the internal audit, that person will never wake up with that skill. It's simple as that. The issue is then, which you must address, how do you deal with that reality? Because that's the reality. There's nothing you can do. But you need a solution, as we have said, this collective is looking to find solution. So because unless these people are talking about it's just generic skills, not specific skills. But if they are sitting in specific skills positions, let's face the reality and deal with the issue rather than try to find something which will never help.
Honorable Chair, I think you are really spot on in saying that in some of the areas, Chair, some interventions will help, but in some other areas, it is very clear that some of these interventions would not necessarily assist. That's why, in fact, Chair, this is an opportune time for the Department to use the skills audit results to do what I refer to as a cleanup. And obviously the cleanup refers to making tough decisions, because in cases where people are sitting where they're not supposed to be sitting, unfortunately some decisions will have to be taken as to which direction are they going. Of course, without ruling out the fact that some of the people, they have a potential to be developed, and obviously the results of the skills audit will point to say there is a potential to develop some of the employees.
No worry, they are just saying when will that happen, because the fifth parliament is coming and we have been sitting with this problem for some time. Again, we know that when ministers comes with people, then they leave them in the department and they appointed them for something else, but they come and occupy critical position in the department where function and skills is needed. We have to face that reality and deal with this matter. We can't dilly-dally about those issues. We need skilled people in right position. You have to identify them. You need to have at least engagement with government, relevant people. Department has to start. Otherwise, we are failing this country. We are failing this nation. It won't work. It's to face it. We are in leadership. We must make tough decisions. You must face it and deal with it. That's why you are leading. That's the issue. For me, is that tough as it is, it needs to be identified. It needs to be faced head on. We cannot have people who are not qualified or skilled to do those things to position which they can't. And we know the history. We know how people landed in those positions. When are we going to clean it? But I take your point, gentlemen, that some of the skill audit will help, some will not. But I'm saying, as the leadership of the department and the minister, you must start to act. And the time to act is now. There's no another time. And we can no longer just keep quiet ourselves as business not usual if the department does not have the capacity to do what it's supposed to do. Otherwise, it becomes difficult, gentlemen. But I know it's not your issue. It's just that it's unfortunate that you inherit all the legacy matters and so on as leadership, but it's fine. But all what I'm saying is that acting DG, can you identify all those positions with people who are not qualified, which need skills, technical skills? How many are those positions? We are having people who are not qualified to those positions, so that we know how many of them who have been mismatched, in what position, what skill is needed, what is the level of skill. But that's what's going to help us to move. And we start to face this matter head on and deal with it. You can proceed, gentlemen.
Okay, thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
You're saying you're also a legacy, that's why you're all meant DDGs. You are part of a legacy yourself, but you can proceed.
No. No, Chair, I must mention that there is a continuous effort to make sure that we are balanced in as far as gender is concerned. In fact, this is evident from the latest recruitment process that we have been busy with. Just to perhaps touch on still once again the issue of skills, Chair. Having noted all the challenges that we have inherited, we have taken a view as the collective, Chair, that we are not going to engage in recruiting going forward any person or persons who do not really qualify, and we have really done our best in terms of the latest recruitment process. And Honorable Chair, we are also adopting an approach that we need to put to make sure that there's retention strategy in place. The bursary policy has been revised also to cater for external students so that we do not only rely on internal people. The Chair did mention that this is the time to really act on some of these things. The skills audit is complete. There is no time really to wait for anything, Chair. We may just need a bit of some little time to make sure that we implement the recommendations of the skills audit, and I'm sure we will be happy to come back to report to this committee. However, I must indicate that, Chair, that that exercise will of course serve as a very good platform to clean up some of these things that have taken place. I think Honorable Lesoma raised a question around the retention, which we are speaking to. Other questions that were relating to finances. Honorable Mutambi raised a question on what is Program 4 all about. This is a program which deals largely with oversight, where the entities, the transfers to the entities are housed. The name Broadcasting and Communication Services had to be negotiated because it was a process where we were consulting with National Treasury and DPSA. So this was a negotiated process, hence the name. There was also a question raised by Honorable Mutambi around whether the SOEs are clear on their roles and responsibilities. I must indicate, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, that the lines are very clear in terms of what SOEs are expected to do and what the department is expected to do. There is a framework which is in place which states exactly what SOEs need to do when. If there are instances, say for example, of non-compliance and not really adhering to the framework, it's not because SOEs do not know. They actually know that at this point in time, X has to be submitted, if it's a quarterly report, if it's an annual report, a performance report and things like those. And of course, as one way of trying to strengthen this oversight function, a DDG will also be appointed in this portfolio just to make sure that it is strengthened further. But in terms of their roles, everyone in the family knows exactly what is expected of them. I think I'll pause at this.
what's remaining? The overlaps and duplication of roles. Let me say the purported overlaps and duplication of roles. Gentlemen.
Honorable Chair and honorable members, the issue of duplication and overlaps, we have introduced a process, a planning process, wherein the department sits in the strategic planning sessions of entities. The entities are also doing the same. The main reason behind that idea, it was to make sure that we do not end up with a situation where one project is being implemented all over. We may not necessarily master it now, but the intention is that when, for example, we talk broadband, we have taken a view that we cannot be talking broadband at Centec, talking broadband at USASA, talking broadband at the DOC. We must be talking one broadband, which is guided by one policy, which is guided by one strategy. If USASA does it, well and good, but USASA has to be contributing to the overall plan. If Centec participates, everyone has to be guided by the overall plan. So that is the approach that we are taking, so that we are able to eliminate some of these overlaps and duplications, not only on broadband. I was just making an example of the broadband, but even in relations to issues around connectivity, schools connectivity, for example, because it's also a project which cuts across. There's Telkom involved, DOC, there's Centec, there's USASA, and so on. So we are beginning to move towards that mode, which says, let's be guided by one framework, which is led by the department. Thank you, Chair.
Any DJ? Acting DJ.
Just to elaborate on work on the ground to avoid duplication, we have the departmental and intersectoral, meaning our SOEs and ourselves on IGR matters are able to look at issues that have been on the ground. I think you'll see that there will be improvement in the oversight visit on the programming on the ground, so that we are able to prevent duplication. But having said so, on the issues that I think DDG Jabu has explained on the CIP 15, we're working with that DPE and EDD and DTI to try and improve the coordination role, so that we minimize the role of Infraco, because they are a player, so that data is equally handled in a competitive way on infrastructure rollout without having to tread in anyone's business interest, because they are all in business. It depends on who funds the business, but they are all in business in a competing space. So we will really work on the skills, as you raised, Chairperson. It's one of the priority issues. We're just waiting for this alignment and migration process. It's going to be a dirty process. When you say dirty, they will lose old friends and new friends that will acquire on the way. But we have to face the reality that the department is not performing according to the way it's supposed to have been structured. But the new structure of the department provides us with new opportunities, because the department evolves. As the sector evolves, as innovation evolves. So it means every time we need to go back and recheck the department, it's still aligned to what the sector needs and to what the challenges are on the sector and industry. So we are working on those issues.
Thank you. Members, any of your questions not answered? Honorable Stein?
Chair, the item I couldn't find was on page 38, but it relates to an earlier question. What is the difference between consultants, contractors, and agency support? Agency and support outsource services, because that's the particular one. It's on page 38 of the document, where you've gone from last year, it's a low base admittedly, but it's a 3,800% increase on your agency and support outsource services. Now, there may very well be a reason for that, but you know, I'd like to know. And then similarly, your contractors have gone up by, 390% or something?
Thank you. In short, is that if you look in terms of 2012 and 2013, 2014, if you start from the audit cost, external consultant plus services plus business advice and so on, consultants plus infrastructure, you see what those terms, legal services, consultants plus professional services, contractors, agency support. And you can see that it jumps from 80,000 to 180 million to 130 million. What are these things exactly? But it's coming in different forms. But you see, it jumps, if you put it just in that stream, it jumps from 80 million to 130 million in 2013, 2014. Now, I'm just thinking, what is the relationship between Treasury giving you money to fill positions but still giving you money for this, which supposed to fill? I'm just the relationship between the posts and this jump of 50 million, around 50 million more, if you look in terms of that these things I'm talking about, and your need to fill positions, and these services, which... If probably, gentlemen, you can just help us to understand, because from where I am, I just took it simple. So it's better as taking this man and fill your position. And then you have people who are able to do their work. But of course, we're talking from a layman position. You know yourself there what is happening, especially the jump contractors from 3 to 15.
Yeah, I think as we go on, the ICT sector gets complex. You remember, I think in the last presentation that we made to the portfolio, I tried to explain that we were a policy-making department just based in Pretoria, Hatfield. But the nature of the work that we do, although we have SOEs that have to be involved in the implementation of the policy priorities, we then don't have concurrence. That's one of the critical issues. Because even if you can go to these PITs, they also have been unable in the past 6 or 7 years just to deal with the post office's PIT, whether they're functioning or not. And they were not the function of the post office, they're the function of DOC that proposed it to be located there. The core piece of the post office was the normal post. I'm just giving an example.
Oh, you gave this problem to post office, okay.
Yes,
I understand.
No, I'm just trying to explain the complexity of why will the consulting fee and professional fee increase. The size of the department, just on its own, is a problem. The geographic location of the department is a problem. The representation of the department at provincial level is a problem, quite frankly, because we don't have an MEC for ICTs, you don't have even an HOD for ICTs. It's a, by the way, at municipal level, by the way, at provincial levels. So we come in and make policies and there's no one to implement them. So partly the department has not only to, with its SOE, implement, but the department itself should be involved in implementation. That's why there's this kind of a challenge of roles. What do you want? Because we have to complement what the other departments are doing. Having said so, there's an emerging trend in government departments of the cross-cutting nature of the ICTs. We are now assisting transport. I mean, there's something that we're working on with Centec on managing the maritime part of the seas and order you through Centec. So something that was done by telecoms is now done by us. We're working. I'm signing an MOU with transport on that. There's an emerging issue that is coming as well with SABC and the health channel with the Department of Health. So the cross-cutting nature of ICT then requires specialized skills for the department to try and assist these other departments. I mean, on environment issues, departments come to us and say, no, this is what we need on green economy, on environment issues we raise, hey, we don't have. You look at around the department, no, we can't participate. Yet it's required of us to assist and respond on green recycling, and we need specialists in particular fields, as an even computer refurbishment, or just on its own. It's not so on guys that do the cabling and all that. It's guys that know the computer, how it's made, the innovators themselves. These are skills that we don't have. Even if it's on an MOU with any other country, we need our own skills to generate them. So these are the areas where we actually have to get some of these consultants to either assist, to train the youth, to train the youngsters, to attract women in ICTs, but with specialized skills that we may not necessarily have. We have to import elsewhere, bring in, transfer the skill and knowledge as we develop whatever we need. But I think the DDG can actually elaborate. I was just giving the profile of the complexities of the challenge that makes us to have this increment.
Thank you. Acting DG members, anything which is remaining? No. Thanks very much, Acting DG and your team. DDG Peer, when we're dealing with the third quarter report, both content development and production, nothing spent. You remember when I was saying this broadcasting unit of yours is a problem? Because if you go and check on the third quarter, there's nothing spent there. And we're on the third quarter. And we've got community radios and other things struggling to survive and so on, and we are sitting with money. Nothing's happened. That was the basis of saying this broadcasting unit of yours need to be dealt with. Not dealt with in a manner of otherwise, in terms of paying focus, so that people are doing what they're supposed to do. Because if they don't spend, it means they're not doing the work which is supposed to happen, although they are doing other work. But thanks very much, Acting DG, and your team and members. I would think that on the issue of the skill and the people, we are not saying you must go and draw people on the street. We are saying you must go and find ways in terms of where to put them, but they must move from those positions because they don't belong there. But you must find within government what do you do with them. We are not saying go and draw people on the street to be unemployed and so on, because you see, we don't want to read headlines tomorrow with, hey, people now are on the street and the other things. You must find within government processes what do you do. But the fact which we are emphasizing, they must just get out of professional position if they are not professional as where they are. It's simple as that. Let people who are professional in those areas to go there and do the work. See how to accommodate them and do whatever within government policies and regulations and so on. But we cannot harbor people who does not have a skill on what they're supposed to do. And then as a result, the government is suffering. I was saying to the DDG policy during lunch members, if you look all the African countries which are surpassing us in terms of economic growth, they are doing that on ICT. That's all. It means we must just accept we are currently weak as a country, as a department. We are not helping the country. These countries are surpassing us only on ICT. That's why their economic growth is moving. So we must accept, and this weakness is you. You see? And we are accepting that the department does not have the capacity to do what they're supposed to do. So we cannot continue folding our arms, knowing that there are people in skilled position which does not possess those skills. So we have to deal with that matter. But like I'm saying, don't throw people on the street and say the portfolio committee says so. So your problem when you want to do bad things, you say it's the portfolio committee. When you do the good thing, you say, yeah, it's us. All the bad things, the portfolio committee says so. When is the good thing, you know, we are managing very well and so on. So no, don't do that. But deal with the matter as we are dealing with it and so on, so that we are able to be able to contribute to the betterment of South Africans and other things and so on. You see, I would love at one point someone to tell me, what is the roadmap to 2020 exactly? You see this thing of 2020 is a problem. We're talking about broadband access 2020, but what is the roadmap? How did we break down that project? At 2013, what is it which we are going to do, which is going to help us to 2020? I'm sure Honorable Stein was raising the matter. Because by now, we should be having a project. We're starting from 2020, working backwards. This year, we'll do 1, 2, 3, coming where we are, so that we know that next year, this is what's supposed to happen to measure us for 2020. But this general rule of 2020 broadband, it does not seem to be a wise way of doing things. I don't know. Maybe we don't have a wisdom, some of us. But from where I'm sitting, it does not seem to be a wise way of doing things.
We should be starting from 2020 and say these are the things we'll do 2019, 2018, 2017, 2016, coming backward, so that we know when we have not achieved this in 2014, what does it mean in terms of the reality, the outcome of 2020. If we don't do this in 2015, what does it impact 20? But the way you are so casual talking about 2020, broadband really, to me, does not make sense. And it makes us to look like we're amateurs. We don't know what we're doing, to be honest. It's like we're just amateurs. And we don't know what we're talking about. We don't know how to run projects. But we managed to run 2020 World Cup. But on this one, we're so casual. We're just talking general. 2020 broadband access, everyone in the country, and so on. How are we going to do that? When are we going to start? Where is the project plan and other things and so on? Probably it's something which I think we need to think about hard. This loose way of dealing with it really was not going to help us and so on. But I see that the NDP is also talking to that. But we need to beef it up in terms of the project and so on. Otherwise, Acting DG and your team, thanks very much. The committee will elaborate and deliberate on the presentation and so on when we finalize our report, which we'll finally present for adoption and the other things. Lisom, I'm not sure whether I wanted to talk. Can the next one put their thing on the screen? Oh, sorry, put your, not your thing, eh? Put the, we don't want to see things which... No, we were supposed to break 40 anyway. If you can just wait and be patient and so that I finish.
The thing on the screen?
No, I'm saying they must set up. I'm not saying they must start to present. It is a different to set up and present. But there is tea outside for 5 o'clock anyway. You must go for tea and come back in 10 minutes' time.